Again. All right. And so for those of you that didn't read the announcement in the invite and in Slack that I put there too, Randy is one of our instructors here, and he had recently looked at a new certification that he's going to talk about tonight. But I wanted to thank you for coming, Randy, and thank everyone else for coming to join and hear from you. Some of you may have been in Randy's class before. You may recognize some names too.
As yeah,
you pop in. We have a very long invite list. I don't know if I even told you all this, but it's our cyber club for sure, but also above and beyond that, we have about 1,000 people on my mailing list right now that kind of come and gone. So we'll have some people still probably come in later, but I went ahead and started the recording so that if anybody missed the beginning, they can go back and watch that. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? The bio was in the introduction or in the invite, if anybody wanted to review that literally, but you could certainly tell us a little bit about yourself and why you're here.
Yeah, definitely appreciate the invitation. I'm glad you didn't tell me there were 1,000 people on the invite. I may not have shown up, but may or may not have. Definitely appreciate it. Yeah, I sent Dr. Burton an email and Jay a month or so ago. I had taken a little bit of time off from teaching and worked on getting the certification and some other things, and shared that with them, not knowing that it would lead to this. But definitely appreciate the opportunity to talk to you guys about it and kind of what I see, you know, my perspective from Raytheon, kind of what we do. And when I started studying for the exam and looking at the material, it really tied into things we were already doing on a daily basis. I just kind of helped put it all together for me a little bit. So the agenda changed a little bit when I started putting the slide deck together, but really not too much different from what you guys saw in the invite. So I was going to go over my professional journey a little bit, kind of show you guys that and talk about how I got to where I'm at. Definitely was never my intention to be where I'm at now. I want to say it was accidental, or it just kind of happened. And I share that with my classes a lot. You know, just had lots of opportunities and, you know, professional opportunities into educational opportunities, into positions and jobs. And I've been really fortunate to have options and those opportunities. So I'll share that with you guys. We'll talk about the exam itself, which is the CISP by SSEP, which is the Engineering Professional Cert, or the, you know, the concentration of the CISP. A little bit about system security engineering, kind of what that means. Sounds super scary, but it's really, really not. You know, it's really more about processes. And then benefits, challenges within organizations. Really what I see at Raytheon, which I feel like is probably universal to some extent. And then just more about the career field. So that's kind of the direction we're going to go. So swiped a slide from our Raytheon corporate. They're really big on sharing like our journeys, you know, how we got to where we are with our from our leadership perspective with our team. So the format that I took from them, started off in Huntsville, Alabama. That's where I'm at now. My grandfather actually moved here after Korea to go to work for Raytheon. So moved from Louisiana to Huntsville. If you guys aren't familiar with Huntsville, it's pretty much where the, you know, our space program took off. You know, it's called the Rocket City. So you can see the Saturn V in the background. Hopefully you can see that. So I've been here pretty much my entire life outside of the Army, and then a little bit of time in Tucson, which I'll talk to you guys about in a minute. But went to the University of North Alabama, majored in criminal justice, you know, had no intention of doing anything with computer systems. Wanted to be in the FBI. So thought about law school for a little bit after criminal justice, ended up in the Army. When I was an all-source intelligence analyst in the Army, which I know intel in the Army is an oxymoron. But that's what I did. Jumped out of planes a little bit, went to Bagram, spent a little bit of time in Afghanistan, came back and started looking for work, and fell into industrial security. Had a couple of jobs doing that. Ended up at NASA, where you can see the Ares program, Ares Project Office right here. If you guys aren't familiar with that, that was the original shuttle replacement. So I worked in that program office doing some export control type security work and some other classified area type stuff. Because at the end of the day, you know, NASA's building rockets, but it's kind of the same technology that a lot of our missile systems and other agencies use. So there was some security there. Wasn't a very security-friendly organization. They're pretty academic. They want to share everything. So while I was there, decided I want to get a master's degree, American Military University, got in security management, continued to pursue the FBI, got an interview. They flew me to Miami for the interview right before you really start the process. And I didn't get selected. They invited me back to interview again, but by then I already had two children. My two older ones back here in the background, you can see. So they were little at that time. So it was just kind of like, you know, life caught up, you know, family caught up. I didn't want to go move, you know, run the risk of that, even though it was a lifelong career kind of ambition. So decided to stay put. Went to work at NASA again. That program got canceled. That ARES program got canceled. And when it did, I just fell into an opportunity at MTSI, which was a small company at the time. I was their physical security PERSEC, ISSM, information system security manager, kind of did everything because it was a small organization. Gave me a lot of exposure to a lot of different things, which really led to my cyber career. And I really fought, you know, that moving into cyber up until that point. And then I just realized, you know what, it's inevitable because it's where our data is. It's where everything we're doing is going that way. It's where all the problems are. It's where all the challenges are. Basically decided I didn't want to do, you know, gates, guns, and guards for, you know, the rest of my life. So really started focusing on that. Went to UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham. I got my master's in MIS. Started working on certifications too. Picked up my Security Plus. A little bit later, picked up the CISP, then the CEH. So kind of went in that order. You know, every couple of years I would do something new. Spent about 6 years at the MTSI corporate office, you know, doing their on-site ISSM work. And then went to the Missile Defense Agency on a contract out there. Was able to do security controls assessment, kind of served that function, even though I was a contractor. If you guys are familiar with RMF at all, you know the security controls assessor is one of the designated positions. It's really an inspector. So we went out and did inspections, compliance activities, those type things for systems, you know, all over MDA. Had an opportunity to leave there to go to work on a really cool helicopter, which is this Apache helicopter here. So I went to the Apache program office, which was really one building over from MDA. So that's one of the perks of living in Huntsville. There are a lot of agencies here, a lot of job opportunities, a lot of really cool things you can work on. Went there because some friends of mine were there. Turned out they were doing, you know, RMF and system authorizations on flight trainers that were unclassified, that were already in production. Really wasn't as challenging as what I thought it was going to be. It was exciting to go to the flight line and get to stand next to the helicopters. Was involved with an adversarial assessment, which really turned to me, it was a little bit hokey. You know, it turned out that the team really couldn't do much with the helicopter. They couldn't even get to it because the gates, guns, guards, when they did get to it, they would have needed a proprietary cable to even plug into the helicopter. So after a few months of that, I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back to MDA. I'm going to go back to the Missile Defense Agency. There it was crazy, lots of challenges, you know, good work. So I went back there for another year. About that same time, I started teaching at Purdue Global. So it was all around 2018. You know, I don't know how that happened. Again, it wasn't something I planned. You know, 10 years ago, if you told me I was teaching doing cyber, I probably would have laughed at you. But, you know, it was a really good opportunity, and I really enjoyed it. And it's really helped me professionally, you know, just learning how to speak to people, you know, hold these Zoom calls, especially with the pandemic. When our entire organization at Raytheon went to Zoom meetings and training, I was already a pro because I do it all the time. So it all worked out well. So I've been doing that with Purdue now for about 3 years. Summer of 19, I got an opportunity to go to Raytheon out in Tucson, Arizona. So we moved the family, went out there as a cyber manager. Tucson and Raytheon. Raytheon is about the only show in town. There's an air base out there, Davis-Monthman. But Raytheon in Tucson is about 14,000 employees. A lot of production, you know, really different environment than anything I'd worked in because most, you know, I don't know how familiar you guys are with DOD and kind of the way things are, but when I'm working at MDA or when I was working at NASA, there was a lot of production, not production, but developmental networks, developmental environments, a lot of software development coding. So didn't really get to see that final product. When I got to Raytheon, you walk out on the factory floor and you see weapon systems rolling off the floor. So it was a really different experience. Also created some challenges, which segue right into this program, you know, this thing, this certification and training I'm talking about, the engineering professional. So a lot of the systems we're working on are manufacturing systems. They're not typical Windows boxes. They're test equipment. You know, they're, you know, you're programming weapon systems and missiles and, you know, plugging into things that, you know, most people don't plug into. So, and it presents some challenges, you know, even with basic cyber hygiene and the things you're doing. So loved it out there. We were out there doing some travel, you know, working. The weather is phenomenal. I know everyone says it's hot, but it's not like Alabama hot. it's not Huntsville, like, you know, tropical hot. So that was gorgeous. I loved it. But you know, when the pandemic hits, you know, my wife was also working at Raytheon. It is a dry heat. And as that is the truth, I always heard that. I never really knew it to be true, but I mean, it is true. My wife decided, you know, when she was working at Raytheon, they sent them home, and in finance, they were never going to go back to the office. You know, our kids got sent home from school. They were working, they were virtual, and they were in kindergarten, first grade. And my little ones, which are also up here, if you can see them. So it was just a tough time for her. And after about a year of that, we went home for Thanksgiving last year, and she was like, you know what, I'm done. I want to go back home. I want to go back to Alabama. So I had actually just got promoted at Raytheon, went back out there and said, look, I'm leaving. I'm sorry. I got to go. And they offered me a job in Huntsville. So it all really worked out really well. We had a really good leadership team, lots of opportunities. So they ended up moving me back home. So that, you know, it worked out really well for the family. So I've been here since then. I'm now the ISM cyber manager for a small facility in Arlington, Virginia, and also our missile integration facility here on Redstone. Again, that's where we're rolling missiles off the line. So it's SM-3s, SM-6s. It's really, you know, a challenging environment from a cyber perspective, but it's a really rewarding environment. But, you know, as a, you know, private service Army guy, you get to see, you know, kind of what you're working on and what you're protecting. So there's a lot of fulfillment in that for me. But that's my story back here in Huntsville. It's been, again, cyber wasn't in my plans, but it's kind of how it's worked out. So the ISSEP, the Information System Security Engineering Professional, the certification itself, again, is vendor neutral. The CISP in general is viewed as the gold standard for cyber. I know on contracts, DoD contracts, you know, a lot of times for the more senior positions, you know, that CISP checks a block. I haven't seen a lot of requirements for that, you know, the concentrations, but there I have seen a few, which is the ISAE3. And really all it does from a job perspective is it puts you in a higher labor category, right?
I've only seen this in Europe.
I'm sorry?
Europe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know there was one position when I was an MDA that was called for that, and it was more of an advanced cyber engineer, cyber analyst. So, but you don't see it much. But it was one of the things I wanted to do. To qualify for the concentration, you have to be a CISP, which in and of itself, you know, requires 5 years of experience in the domains, two or three of the domains. And on top of that, you have to have a couple of years of experience in the engineering domains. So it's not, for most people, you can't just come in off the street and take it. You got to have a little bit of work experience. The exam overview, I mean, kind of the, you know, the format is 125 questions. You have to do all 125 questions. It's not like the CISP now where if you, you know, you knock them out, they end it early. So you do all the questions. It was 3 hours, and it took me probably the better part of two and a half hours to do it. You cannot go back, and a 70% score is passing. I thought this was kind of interesting. I went and looked at the numbers of ISSCPs, and they're really low. So in the United States, as of July, there's only 1,233 with, you know, 93,000 CISSCPs. So not a lot of people are going to get into concentration. I also looked at architecture and the management professional, and they were very similar. So just not a lot of people, again, doing it. And I think maybe it's because, you know, it's not a requirement for a lot of positions, not a requirement for a lot of jobs. You don't see it in the job listings or job recs. And again, I think it's a lot of the things we're doing anyway. You know, it's the things we're doing on a daily basis. Maybe people just don't see the value just yet in the cert. Worldwide, though, there's only, what, 40 people outside of the U.S. that hold the cert. So I thought that was, you know, really, really super interesting and interesting. And I can tell you it's not because the exam is overly difficult, because I passed it. You know, I'm a product, you know, criminal justice major, a product of the Alabama public school system. You know, I passed the certification. So it's not anything that anyone on the call couldn't do. The domains, and I got this right off the IC Square's website, so it's nothing super secret that I can't share with you. Domain one, system security engineering foundations, and they kind of break down the percentage, you know, of the exam. It's 25%, or risk management is 14%. I thought that would have been more, but it isn't. Security planning and design, 30. Systems implementation, verification and validation, 14, and then security operations, change management and disposal. And again, this is very process-driven. It's a very process-driven exam. So it's really more about understanding concepts and how things should work and being able to answer questions. And a lot of it comes directly from a lot of these NIST documents. So the 800 series, I really studied this more than anything because I was pretty familiar with the risk management framework. You know, it's kind of what I do in my job on a daily basis. So all of that I was pretty familiar with. The engineering part, you know, I really, really pulled from this. The cyber resilient systems, and then just the considerations for multidisciplinary approach and engineering of trustworthy, secure systems. And that's really where I think the end state is. That's where the goal is. It's the trustworthy, secure systems. And that's what the ISSEPs do, or ISSEs, you know, is easy to hear a lot. So that's the goal. But these three documents in and of itself, that was the majority of what that exam entailed. So system security engineering, you know, it sounds mysterious, right? It sounds like it's super complicated. But at the end of the day, what you're really trying to do is just apply scientific engineering principles in a standardized, repeatable, and efficient manner. And that standardized, repeatable, and efficient manner is what I really take back to what I do every day at Raytheon. You know, what I see. I see where we struggle. You know, and it doesn't seem like it would be that complicated or difficult, but to get something that's standard across a gigantic organization, repeatable, where you can train people and, you know, and it's easily executed, it's really a challenge. And, you know, ultimately is to identify secure vulnerabilities, requirements, and methods of verifications, and deliver a system that satisfies the stakeholder security needs. A lot of times the stakeholders don't even know what the security needs are. So that's a super challenge there. And just getting involved in a discussion, you know, early enough in the process where you can actually meet that goal is, you know, a victory in and of itself, if you can do it. Deliver trustworthy systems that satisfy stakeholder requirements and their established risk tolerance. Helping them establish this is another challenge. A lot of them don't know. They just want a system. They just want a system so they can go execute on their contract, on their work, build their, you know, deliver whatever it is they have to deliver and make sure the organization is functioning. They don't know what their risk tolerance is from a security perspective. And again, this is a process-driven approach. It should be tied to the system development and lifecycle. It should be, which means we should be involved, you know, cyber engineers, system security engineers, in the beginning of the planning process. And I can tell you, I got a use case that happened to me. It's happening right now. Got an email in May, middle of May. I'm in Huntsville, our folks in Tucson building a brand new test system, didn't involve us at all. And my job now is to basically make sure the systems are authorized. You know, they're authorized, security, you know, controls are in place, you know, we're compliant, and then work with the government to get the system authorized. They send us an email in middle of May asking to get a new system into our space. They're getting ready to ship it. And that's the first we've heard about it. And these things don't just come up and hop, you know, pop up overnight. You know, Raytheon, when you're building these test systems and they're updating to Windows 10 and they're doing all these, you know, undoing all these legacy processes and issues, they didn't involve cyber at all. They didn't involve us until they were ready to move the system in. And then they put it in our lap and they say, hey, I need this authorized, like, you know, next week. And we had all kinds of issues and challenges. So, it happens a lot. And again, it shouldn't happen like that, but it does. So they ended up shipping it. We got it probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. They were like, it's great, it's good, it's going to be, you know, it should be super easy. We did a scan, very first STIG scan. If you guys are familiar with the STIG, the Security Technical Implementation Guide, which is a DISA tool, scores came back horrible, like 40%. I mean, they were awful. Like, they had done nothing. It was straight out of the box. So right there, we're delayed. I have to go back to them, you know, because it's built by our engineering team in Tucson. It's not like they're just all here. So luckily they have a duplicate mirror system in Tucson. So they were able to go in and reconfigure it, you know, work on it, try to enhance it. And they've done that apparently, but now we have our guys here working second and third shift this week trying to get it done to our system in Huntsville. So because of their poor planning, you know, not involving us, just completely leaving us out of the process, now we have an emergency that we're having to kind of help resolve. Oh yeah, I know. I saw you were at Sierra Vista. That's where I went to my AIT at, was Sierra Vista. So when we were out there, I lived in Vail, which was about an hour north of where you are. So yes, I loved Arizona. It was awesome. Hopefully I get to go back one day, but yes, yeah, so, I mean, that's just a recent use case, you know, where we've had issues here at Raytheon, and we're an engineering company, you know, we're building these weapon systems, you know, we've been doing it for a long time. It seems like we shouldn't have these issues, but they continue to pop up. So as an ISSCP, you're going to analyze organizational needs, define security requirements. If you're asked, getting asked is a problem. Design security architectures, you know, secure designs, kind of build that into the system. And you know, again, just to meet the stakeholder requirements, you want to have an operational system that functions in a secure manner, that again, you know, you can is compliant, you know, and hopefully these processes and things are repeatable and efficient. And at the end of the day, you can build efficiencies into your organization. A little bit more on system security engineers and what they do. Again, it's really being the belly button for the, you know, the system security. Oh, there's one. You found a job for the engineer.
There you go.
It's the only one in the country. No, so manages access to use of system and system resources. Configure the minimum. It's configured. You make sure the systems are configured to minimize exposure vulnerabilities. Through techniques such as design choice, component choice, security technical implementation guides, those are the STIGs I was talking about, right? Patch management, if you guys know what, you know, we talk about patching a lot in my classes, inevitably, because that's another problem we have is patching, you know, basic cyber hygiene. And that's where these engineers come in. So a lot of the systems where there's those challenges exist, you know, your security engineers are going to come in and identify those issues, work with the programs, you know, to make sure they're, you know, their solutions are going on, right? Solutions are in place being implemented. And it's not just, again, at the beginning of the system development or build, it's throughout the life cycle of the system, which, you know, I went back to the system development life cycle. So we should be doing this throughout. So when you're planning development, production, throughout sustainment, all the way through decommissioning of the system, that's where these processes are, you know, and we need to be following them, you know, building them into our organization. Your job is also going to be to monitor, detect, or, you know, respond to security anomalies. You know, typically we do a couple of these things well. A lot of times the response is not great. So we might monitor it. We might have the tools in place to detect it. But what do you do when you see something? You know, you go back to Target, you go back to any of these, you know, major cases. A lot of those companies and organizations have the tools in place, but they didn't either have the expertise on staff or the training, or someone just, you know, ignored something. So it's, you know, a lot of human error that still goes into it. And this is what I kind of have been talking about already. The early and frequent consideration of system security engineering principles reduces rework expense resulting from late to need security requirements, which is kind of what I, you know, got handed, right? They build these systems. If you're not involved in the beginning, they build the systems the way they think they need to operate. And then they send them to you, and then they want you to bolt the security onto the back. And a lot of times that doesn't work. So, you know, if you go in and start changing settings, you start changing, adding tools, security monitoring tools, a lot of times you impact the way the system works, you know, and it's not going to be functional. So it makes it extremely challenging to do that if you're not involved in the beginning of the process. The benefits and challenges, again, this is kind of Randy's opinion on what I've seen. Specifically, I don't want to, you know, not just Raytheon, other positions I've had too, but most recently at Raytheon. You know, the benefits are the incorporation of security design at the beginning of the projects, that increased standardization yields efficiencies across your organization, which efficiencies reduce time, reduce labor, reduce cost, and reduce risk. So it sounds really great when you talk about it, but getting it to work and work efficiently, you know, with your organization is a challenge. You reduce organizational program cost and risk. You build the system correct the first time, You ensure the functionality of the system up front, and then you kind of can avoid having to bolt security on in the back. You know, you don't want to get a product and have to figure out how to plug and play security, you know, and do the things you have to do to be compliant and make sure that your risk is really mitigated. Because ultimately, if you do that, your system isn't going to work, which is kind of what we're facing now. So challenges, people. I think across the board, this is something else I also hit on with my classes quite a bit. If we were just talking ones and zeros, I think, this would be easier to manage. Just the human element. It's dealing with personalities. It's dealing with, well, we've always done it this way. Why do you want to come in here and change things? Why do you want to increase our cost, increase our time, mess up our schedule? And ultimately, we have a challenge in getting our leadership and organizational leaders, C-suite, all the way down, to understand that we're there to help. We're on the same team. We're going to be a business enabler because cyber isn't going away. Cyber engineering isn't going away. Threats aren't going away. So how can we convince everyone in the organization that we're going to enable the success of their programs and not be a security roadblock? And that's a real challenge, to gain that trust. And then you got to speak dollars and data, because a lot of, the management, the leadership, they don't understand. You can say ransomware. You can say, mean tolerable downtime. You can say all these things, and they don't know how that translates to their program. But when you start talking data and dollars and schedule impacts, those are the terms that they understand. So the earlier we get involved, the more we can, understand the goals, requirements of the program, and then help the program to be successful. But those are the challenges. I mean, it's a daily challenge, where we are. And some people just, again, when you're talking, again, Raytheon, we have engineering, we have our system admin group, we have cyber, we have our program management, we have multiple programs across the board supporting multiple government customers. Everybody just wants to do what they need to do. They just have their goals in mind. They want to get their product out, make their program successful. Don't get them away. Don't slow me down. So getting, again, involved in the beginning of that process is difficult sometimes. Career paths. Pretty much anything within, cyber is going to be a career path, but, senior systems engineer, cybersecurity, put IA there, on the side, because there was a DoD memo that came out several years ago that said information assurance went away, so we're now cyber. You still see information assurance a lot. We'll see cybersecurity as well. So cybersecurity.
We're changing all of our programs that were called information assurance too. We're switching them all over to cyber too. So
we had databases in our system where we housed all of our folders, and they were all IA. There's IA everywhere, and all of our historical documentation and our leadership has been hammering us to, we're not IA, we're cybersecurity.
We're working on that too. That's cool.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Cybersecurity manager, information system security officer, security analyst, and ISSE. And as those jobs, when you say cybersecurity, it's such a broad field. It's like you talk to people and say, well, what do you do? I'm a cybersecurity analyst and manager. They have no idea what you're doing. And you could tell me that, and I wouldn't know what you're doing at work, because you could be doing offensive, defensive policy. You could be working in the NOC or SOC and monitoring traffic and doing packet analysis, you could be doing just about anything. You could be working on Apache on a helicopter and, working on embedded systems, or it's just so, so vast and so broad. For me right now as a cybersecurity manager, I deal with mainly funding and staffing and training. It's like, it's more project management type work, and then I deal with issues like people sending us systems that, we didn't know about. So, more big problem kind of things that trying to resolve and, not get fired or go to jail. It's a very broad field. So you have all kinds of career paths, lots of opportunities and options, and it's, again, really good field, really good, career path, lots of, from, fulfillment from your job on a daily basis to, and lots of good salaries. But man, there are some stressful days, it's not easy. And if it were easy, everyone would do it. But again, the job outlook, and this is kind of cyber wide, I believe, and So the Bureau of Labor projects a 31% growth in this field from 2019 to 2029, which this is a little bit old, but probably still pretty accurate, which is much more than the national average of 4%. So, I mean, you can, there are more people, I mean, more jobs than there are people to fill them in cyber. A lot of it depends on your geographical area, you know, where you're located as to, you know, what industry you're going to be in. But I'm telling you right now, we can't find people that can even speak to like the CIA tribe, you know, ask simple questions in interviews. I'm interviewing a lot, you know, and it's, you know, what's confidentiality? What's integrity? You know, I had one guy tell me, hey, integrity is doing the right thing when no one's looking. You know, I'm like, you're right. It is, but that's not the answer I was looking for. So, you know, and I'm, you know, trying to help my classes, you know, understand this, like, don't self-disqualify your, you know, don't self-disqualify for job opportunities. Because you may read these job listings a lot of times are written by HR people. They don't understand. You may read that and say, oh my God, I can't do that. And that feeling doesn't go away because that's that, you know, we all feel like that some days, like it's just completely overwhelming. The imposter syndrome is real in cyber. And you have days where you feel like you don't know anything and what are you even doing? And then you have some days where you feel like, man, I can, solve every problem. But don't self-disqualify. The job market is incredible. You know, if you're going through the program here, you know, you're working on certifications, you have any kind of experience, you know, professionally, you're going to be super competitive for these positions. Yeah, Security Plus, that's, yeah, and the certs, you know, the certs will get you too. And the certifications, like I'm a believer in certifications to get you an interview. I don't feel like I'm any smarter because I have a certification. I feel like, you know, I'm trying to use the certifications to get me where I want to go in my career and open up opportunities and options. They get you the interview, just like your degree, and, you know, they'll get you an interview. And at the interview, you got to get the job. But there are so many jobs, so many options out there. Again, don't hold yourself back because you don't feel like you can do something. If you can, you know, if you can define integrity from a cyber perspective, we'll pretty much hire you. This aggressive growth is due to the increasingly digital nature of record keeping. Again, you're talking HIPAA, you're talking medical, you're talking financial industry and SOX. Look at the ransomware attacks now. They're on everything, you know, from the, you know, Colonial Pipeline to the, was the food company, meat company that got shut down. And these are major industrial events that have, you know, we were out of gas in Huntsville. I mean, you couldn't find gas. There were gas lines, you know, everywhere because of a ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline. And, you know, my wife is oblivious. She's like, why is there no gas? You know, I'm like, you don't watch the news. So she's into the Kardashians. it's really important work, you know, and the median salary, you know, the salary goes along with that. But you don't get paid a lot of money unless the job itself is super stressful or super important. So it kind of goes hand in hand. Yeah, if you got the certs and experience, you're pretty golden unless you bomb an interview or unless you're not a good teammate. So that goes a long way too. So that's, again, you know, what I talk to my classes about a lot is, you know, the personal skills, the soft skills are super important. You got to be a good teammate because, you know, when you're doing cyber engineering, you're doing anything in cyber IT, you're not going to be able to do it by yourself. So you get the certs, you get the knowledge. You know, get in the door, learn the organization, but be a really good teammate to your peers. And then you are golden because your opportunities are going to be limitless. And then you never know who you're going to run into. Like cyber and IT is a really small community. I know people that I work with in Tucson. I know people in the Boston area. People in Colorado, everyone in Huntsville. I mean, Huntsville is now the largest city in Alabama. Which is Alabama. It's not, you know, not a gigantic city. But from a cyber perspective, we almost know everyone. You can say somebody's name. You're like, well, yeah, either you know someone or you know someone who used to work with them. So your reputation really goes a long way. So being a good team player, you know, being somebody that, you know, you can get along with at work is super important, as well as the knowledge and certifications and all that. So that paragraph says the job market is really good. It's really good. Lots of opportunities. So I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, but that's my LinkedIn contact. If you guys ever need anything, the best way to get me, I get messages automatically on my phone. I'm getting some right now. You know, if you have any questions, let me know.
So can you say
No, you were breaking up a little.
Randy, you may need to mute your microphone.
Okay.
Yeah, I just put in the chat. I don't know if you're seeing the chat, but I was just thinking, were there more questions, interview question samples that you could tell us about that you ask? Like the CIA said.
Okay, yeah. So it depends on the job level. But we always try to, we really start off, and it depends on, you know, what we're doing at Raytheon, you know, in our department is a lot of compliance activities, a lot of, you know, risk management framework. You know, I talk about the NIST 837. So the steps to that, you know, what, and not even just the steps, but, you know, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are the steps there? So much of the way things used to be was kind of a cookie cutter approach. And I hate to say that because I've been working in this field now for 20 years, which makes me feel super old. That's why my hair blends into the wall. Is, you know, we had a cookie cutter approach to authorizing systems in the Department of Defense, you know, no matter if they were, you know, processing classified, secret, top secret, whatever. It was kind of a one size fits all. You did these things and you got your authorization. And then, you know, now with RMF, it really is supposed to be a more risk managed approach. So every system is not the same. It really depends on your environment. You know, what's your availability requirements? What's your data? You know, where's your real risk? You know, what's the level? You know, what are your other supplementary controls? What facilities are you in? You know, do you have personnel security requirements? All those things. Should go into how you categorize your system, you know, based on how that happens. You select your controls, you implement your controls, and then you speak to controls you can implement. And then you have, you know, compensating controls that you can, you know, apply. There's just all those things that go into it. So no system is going to be the same. So being able to speak to that, you know, just from a philosophical standpoint, and shows that you have a high level understanding of kind of what we're doing, is really goes a long way in an interview. I had one guy, we said, hey, do you know RMF? And Tucson and Raytheon had flown him out to Tucson from somewhere. And he said, no, but my friend does RMF. I was like, yes, no, yeah, we're not gonna, yeah, no.
That doesn't help.
Yeah, so I mean, we have some really good interviews, but I got some really good stories too of bad answers. So that was a bad answer. He told me that I was asking why cyber. He said, I'm really super passionate about cybersecurity. I was like, well, tell me about the CIA triad. Yeah, I don't know that. I'm like, so don't tell me you're passionate about something if you can't talk about, you know, the core, you know, basic concepts of what it is. So don't lie on your resume. Don't copy and paste cybersecurity terms like Wireshark and Nmap and, you know, all the tools. If you can't speak to what they are and have at least a baseline working knowledge of what they are. I had one lady we interviewed, I was looking at her resume before she walked in. And I was like, man, this is a red team, like, you know, SME. Like, she's out there doing pen testing. She knows all these tools. Like, why does she want to come work here? Started asking her, I was like, tell me about Wireshark. Well, I had a book on that. I just read a book on it. Well, that's not what your resume says. And in all honesty, if she was really nice, you know, she had a really good personality, it seemed like. She had baseline knowledge, had the education. We probably would have hired her for an entry-level job. And that's all she wanted. But her resume was so deceiving that we didn't hire her. You know, it was just a really big red flag. So definitely use your resume to
integrity. This is, it all circles back to integrity in one way.
Yeah, exactly. Which that the other guy would have had the right definition for integrity in that perspective, right? So be honest, but, you know, don't be. I appreciate humility, and that's one of the things I really appreciate in someone when I'm working with them. But don't be humble on your resume. Your resume is how you're going to, you know, and what they say about, HR looking at resumes for 10 seconds and then hiring manager looking at resumes for 10 seconds. It's absolutely true. You know, if you get a job, you know, you may get 400 resumes for it. HR may cut it down to 20, 30, and the hiring manager flips through and picks out the ones he wants to interview. So really, you know, tailor your resume as best you can based on your experience to the job requisition. Make sure those skills are highlighted. but be honest at the same time. So, and again, even, you know, for entry-level jobs, what you guys are doing in classes here, you know, a lot of that translates. You think, well, I'm just getting a bachelor's degree, but if the things you're studying, the tools you're using in labs, all that stuff can go in your resume. Just be sure you can speak to it and answer basic questions. No one's going to get too deep, you know, in a 35, 45 minute interview. They just want to see that you're competent and, you know, what you put down. So,
we had, I don't know if you don't have the Romero. Now, Raytheon's kind of a big company, but Heather Romero from Raytheon came. And of course, I always have to ask the same question I do about CCDC, the competition. And I was just curious if that carries weight with Raytheon itself, if students have been involved in CCDC.
Yeah, it would, absolutely. So that's
just wondering.
Any kind of experience, anything that shows extracurricular activities, anything that can convey passion for the field, you know, and that you really want to be in the field, I'm telling you, it's if you have the degree, you have a passion, you can convey that in an interview, you have a pulse, you know, you can get a job. It's, you know, you can't maybe not get, you know, the first job or every job. You may not get the very first job you want, but you can get your foot in the door somewhere. So, yeah, that absolutely everything helps. Anything that you can add to your resume. I think I saw a question about salaries. So entry level salaries, like for Raytheon, information system security officers are going to range anywhere from probably $50,000 to $70,000, you know, depending on experience, you know, prior military, you know, prior service, you know, what you've done, if you have IT background or anything like that, all, you know, adds to it to where they can bump you up into a labor category, but, you know, at least 50-60K for an entry level straight out of college, you know, higher. You know, the more senior level, I mean, it's almost endless. I mean, 120 to 160, 170. I mean, I just, you know, when you start talking senior level, you know, managers, director levels are going to creep up higher than that. So, again, it's architects, even if you're a non-manager, you're a senior technical person, senior technical SME, there's the salary potential is, again, and we're DOD, so you can go to other organizations, other industries, and probably make more money. I had a buddy of mine that left Raytheon when I first got out there and went to work for a company in Silicon Valley, and he like doubled his salary. But when he got out there, he realized that, you know, that salary wasn't free. It was, he was living in the office. He was working 80 hours, 90 hours a week. COVID hit, work didn't stop. He had teams all over the country. He was on calls and telecons all day long, all night long. He lasted about 9 or 10 months, and then he came back to Raytheon. So it's not all about dollars. There's some quality of life things that go along with that. You know, I think that kind of job would be great if you were single, having kids and a family and stuff. It takes a toll. So you got to kind of balance your family situation, you know, kind of what you want to do and what works. So I know for me right now that environment wouldn't work. Raytheon, on the other hand, I get a lot of off time, you know, they're pretty flexible with me. So it really works well, for the family right now.
I'm seeing lots of research now about cybersecurity and IT burnout recently. Just for folks like, you know, yourself and others that just really need a timeout, because it's been nonstop for so long and it just keeps getting worse as far as the demand for your time.
It really is. I was actually texting with a friend of mine today that works at Deloitte, and he's going through the same thing. It's like, you know, organizations will take as much time as you'll give them, you know, and it's, you got to kind of set some boundaries. I mean, and it's kind of ebbs and flows. I mean, it's, you know, obviously the expectation is you're going to work and put in the time and effort, you know, when it's required, but it can't be 365 days a year, right? You just can't maintain it. So there's always going to be high, you know, high tempo times, and it's going to kind of ebb and flow and go down. And you got to kind of manage that, you know, and if you get to a point where you can't manage it, then, you know, hopefully you have a management team that really supports you. And I can tell you, we have that. I've had that. Like I said, you know, family issues came up. I needed to move back home. I was already looking for jobs outside of the company organization. And I told him, I was like, I got to go. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know when, but I'm looking. you know, a day later they came back and said, hey, what would you want to move back with us? You know, and I was like, absolutely. Your relocation package is incredible. It's like, so, I mean, you know, and the other part of that is, you know, continuing education. You want to work for an organization that not only values your time and your family and, you know, that quality of life. I don't want to say work-life balance. I think that's kind of overused because we're really never disconnected nowadays. But they also want to, you know, value your continued education, professional development. You know, and we talk about that a lot in the classes I got too. So these certifications, the training, all those things can get really expensive. It's the test is $600-$700, right? So you don't want to pay for that out of pocket. Yeah, tuition assistance, master's degrees. You want to work, you know, you got to do enough to get in the door and then take advantage of that money and those benefits to, you know, improve your resume, improve your skill set, open up future opportunities. You know, not again, Raytheon has all kinds of issues I've been talking to you guys about, but they have a $25,000 a year, you know, education benefit that you can use for almost anything, you know, master's degrees and anything that Raytheon does except a pilot's license. They won't let you get a pilot's license. But any other field, if you want to get an MBA, if you want to diversify yourself, you know, get a, you know, a cyber engineering, you know, degree, cooking, culinary school, I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the policy. Certifications, you know, and it's last year, you know, the policy kind of changed. Before that, it was a little different to get difficult to get approval. Now it's almost instant. You know, anything you want to do, as long as it applies to the organization, the business, they'll approve it. They have a lot of deal or a lot of relationships with it, with universities, you know, education programs. So retention is, and that is a hot topic right now. We merged with UTC, which is changing a lot of the benefits for the better so far. But yeah, so we're now one of the largest defense contractors right up there with Boeing, which is, I had a call today talking about insurance changes. Yeah, so. So that's changing next year. A lot of the retirement benefits are changing. The education assistance thing changed, which was incredible. So time off is not changing, which is a good thing. That's one of the, we work a 980 schedule or 410 schedule, a lot of flexibility. Yep. Yeah. So take advantage of that. You know, that's, again, I can't, that's a lot of free money. And I see people using, missing out on it and leaving it on the table all the time. And even at Raytheon, you have this $25,000 pot of money sitting there every year. Use it. You know, it's hard to use that much money, but you, I mean, go get some certifications, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's there for you, and it's one of the best benefits out there, so.
So, Randy, do you think it's really worthwhile to do ISSCP? I mean, everybody that I know, including people that work for ISC Square, no one really failed to see a return on investment. Do you personally feel that there is a return on investment on doing ISSCP?
So I haven't had it that long, but I can tell you the knowledge is kind of covered in it. I can tell you something that we need to improve on as an organization. You know, kind of the subject matter of ISSCP is something that I'm trying to take now that I've done the cert. You know, it's something I was doing already, but it's kind of put it in the forefront of my mind, and I'm looking at processes and I'm looking at things we can improve upon. I know it's an area that as an organization we can improve. I don't know if it would give me another job per se. I can tell you, I see the ISSCP at Raytheon. We have three different cyber divisions. We have our cyber division I'm in, which is mainly compliance for our classified environments. We have our unclassified, you know, business cyber team that is handling, you know, that, you know, our internet facing, you know, unclassified, you know, network. And we also have our cyber engineering department, which really focuses on the weapon systems. So they're doing cyber engineering on the missiles, you know, on everything that we're developing and putting out on the embedded systems. And that's where I see the ISSCPs a lot. I took a boot camp with that part of Raytheon last year, and everyone in that class that was leading the class had that cert. So when you're talking embedded systems, you're talking weapon systems, you're really talking that area of cyber. I think it was valued there. I can tell you our organization values it. I just don't know that I'm going to get another opportunity in my department, you know, based on that cert. But from just from the knowledge perspective, I'm glad I did it. Yeah. No problem. Thank you.
Yeah, James has some questions in the chat. I don't know if you can address those, but about cloud.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't watching that.
It's okay. And Robert Kale, who just left, by the way, James, is our cloud sponsor. He's the cloud guy. Just left. Exactly. But go ahead, Brandon.
Yes, cloud. And yeah, I mean, even in Department of Defense, in our classified environments, it's the cloud. Amazon Web Services, you know, I don't know if you guys have read anything about the JEDI contract. That Amazon challenge. So JEDI was supposed to be a DoD-wide cloud solution. But even some of the classified environments are going to that. I can tell you Raytheon is looking at it. We have more of a, and even when I was at MDA, it was like DoD CIO directive to begin reducing the number of disconnected systems we have, because, you know, you hear the term air gapped a lot. That's kind of been the way that things have been in the classified environment for DoD. Everything is air-gapped, and that because it's air-gapped, it's secure. Except now we know it's not. You know, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong. And ultimately, we're protecting against our insider threat. And you go read the news, and you see people that are printing off, you know, storage rooms full of classified documents. You know, they're pulling out CD thumb drives. You know, people are getting, you know, data and things they shouldn't, or maybe they have access to, but they're using them in incorrect or unauthorized ways all the time. And when you have an isolated environment, it's more difficult to monitor because you have so many segmented networks, you're having to monitor them all individually. So there's a mandate from DoD to really stop that and try to reduce that, interconnect everything, put in more robust monitoring. You know, data centers are part of that, you know, cloud services where it can be implemented. It's never going to be 100% solution, but you're seeing that even in the Department of Defense as more of a, you know, driving force and cost reduction. So
you'll go AWS ultimately?
I think that's the way. I know there's some, I know Amazon has the data centers already approved for some collateral processing of the DoD. I haven't seen that. But yeah, I think AWS is kind of where they're going, and they got away from JEDI, which was their original solution. I think it's going back to Amazon maybe, but that's, again, way above my pay grade. I just know that from reading. Yeah. Zero trust is a key term. You know, that's a buzzword now. Seen a lot of that. Insider threat is, and again, that's what we're, understanding the risk to your environments when you're talking about interviewing. That's one of the questions I'll ask too. I was like, you know, I'll bring it up. I was like, have you heard the term air gapped? Yes, I have. Well, okay. Assuming that the network is air gapped, what do you think our biggest risk is? You know, and how do we protect against that? So understanding your environments, understanding how your organizations that you're applying for are operating is super important. And it goes a long way. If you can speak to that, and if you immediately pop out your insider threat, you know, I'm like, oh man, this person gets it. Okay. You know, if you get the big picture and you can understand and you can think logically, you know, we can train you on how to do the rest of it. You know, it's so the big picture part is important.
What do you think of being exhausted or something like that, or not being ready for the interview? I've had cases where I've interviewed at the end of the day and I had, you know, prime after prime. You know, one day someone asked me, what's the AU policy? And I mean, an hour later, of course, I remember what's AU policy because I work with it all of the time. But do you feel that there is something such as daily burnout? I mean, it's not burnout. I mean, I don't know what word to use, but where, you know, maybe because you didn't disconnect for an hour or two, your brain is so focused on a prime that everything else is kind of gone.
Yeah, you can definitely see. I see that a lot in interviews. People get nervous, and you can tell they're kind of too wound up. It's the same thing with trying to study for a test. I think if you can get too wrapped up about preparation to where you can't relax and just answer a question. You know, and again, you know, in what we do, I can absolutely appreciate. I don't know the answer, but I'll find it because. Sorry, my dogs are going crazy now. My hour is about up. None of us know all the answers, you know, and that's what, again, we're never going to know all the answers. We all have our specialties, our areas of expertise. I've got friends of mine who are the most technical people in the world, and they call me all the time. I got a friend of mine today texts me, hey, where's this policy? Because I'm a policy guy. You know, I can answer these policy questions, but they can go in and tear a system down and, you know, defend against any kind of, you know, attack that you got. But the policy, they hate it, you know, so, but together, we all work together, you know, we're a team. We can solve the problems and kind of work together to make sure that, you know, things are good. So, not knowing the answer is fine. You know, even in an interview, and I'll try to tell everybody the same way. Not all interviewers are the same. I can tell you for us, we try to have a pretty relaxed kind of conversation because I'm really more concerned about getting to know someone, you know, and understanding that they're honest on their resume. They know what they know, but, you know, it's hard to do too much in an hour long discussion, right? You can't get really too far in the weeds. So just try to prepare as best you can. And then, you know, if something comes up and you don't know the answer, you know, that's okay.
Internships. That's the way to go. Internships. You can try them out.
Raytheon has a robust internship program. They hired just in our department in Tucson. They hired, I want to say 8 or 10 this year, this summer. And it's a really good program. They will pay well. They also do like a housing allowance and other things for the summer so that they even take people outside of the area and bring them in. And I don't know if they do that at every location, but I know they did it in Tucson. We had, you know, a handful in our cyber department, but it's super competitive.
So very important question, Randy. Many of my students, as I'm sure many of your students don't have clearances. Do you guys sponsor or clearances, or is it a big no-no?
No, they do that. Yeah, they do. They get out and far the application process is early enough to where they begin that clearance process. I think at the beginning of the year, like spring, February, March, and then by the summer, you know, the interns have it. I know even here locally, before I was teaching at Purdue Global, I was trying to find talent when I was at a different job. And I started working with the University of Alabama Huntsville. They have a cyber incubator program. Where they're partnering with a lot of DOD agencies here in town, and they're able to sponsor the clearances. They almost have everything in place where they're almost like a defense contractor with a facility clearance, and they're able to place people and students into the organization, start their clearance process, and get them in there. So there's ways to do it. Raytheon does it. They will, if you get selected for the program, they'll start that clearance process for you.
What about for regular jobs as opposed to apprenticeships and summer jobs? I mean, do you guys hire full-time people that don't have clearances?
They do. They prefer, obviously, if you already have that in place, that is a benefit. But if you check all the other blocks and you have the education, you have the experience, they will hire people and begin that process for them. Some of it is just, it just really limits where they can put you because some of the clearance processes, you probably know, are really lengthy. And then you always run the risk of someone not getting it. So if you hire someone, what they'll do is they'll make the offer contingent upon an interim or a final clearance. So then you basically can't start until that process is done.
But that's a huge benefit, though. If they can get that through the company, then add that to their list of, you know.
Yeah. If you have that and a degree in a cert, you can pretty much find a job in like 5 minutes. So.
Yeah.
Awesome. Which is bad for hiring managers because if you have a bad day at work, the next day you're working somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that retention, we're back to that retention thing. It's difficult with students as well as it is with employees these days. There's always greener grass, right?
It's just not always greener.
Yeah. You know, it's just chatting. We definitely cover AWS and Azure in our cloud degree and throughout our program. There's a couple other classes within the cyber program as well. And that's what we use in our internship program. That's what I was talking about in the chat there. Purdue Global, and I'm not even sure if Randy's aware, but a lot of our faculty are not even aware that we have a virtual internship program that allows students to join as apprentices now so they can join and gain those skills before they even get to that point in the program. All students have an option between capstone and internship at the end of the program, and you can choose to do the internal virtual internship with Purdue Global at that time, or you can do it anytime you're ready. So. I'll send out the information later on that. I'll put that in Slack if everybody's in Slack, I'm sure. But this was great, Randy. I think it's really helpful to show another possible path for students. I mean, there's just like limitless options for folks in cybersecurity and IT these days, and you're kind of an example of another flavor that people can consider in the manufacturing space and the engineering space. So that's really awesome to hear about that. I am very thrilled. I'm just watching the chat there, sorry. But I'm really happy that you were able to come. And some of you that are in the meeting here will probably have Randy as an instructor at some point. He does teach in the program, in case you didn't know that or shouldn't see that in the title, as do a few of other faculty that are here. So thank you, faculty, for joining as well. Any final questions? We'll have a recording sent out, and then I can post some more information for you guys. And Randy, I'm not sure if I mentioned this too, is after the recording is done, it'll be turned into a podcast and it is added to our website. If you want to add it to your social media, you can, but.
Oh man, I've been talking about Raytheon this whole time.
Well, we want to talk out there just in case anybody wants to come back. And I mean, it's all kind of in one space. So all of the different speakers we've had over the last, I don't know, what's it been, almost a year now, since we've had all the, more than a year now, when I think about it, Dr. Picard started this. And we have a whole list of folks that are out there in the podcast land. But thanks so much. I think it was a great talk tonight, and looks like we had a lot of great questions and contributions.
Okay. Yeah, definitely appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you. And everybody, we'll see you back in the classroom, and you can use Bongo again, because I know you love Bongo, I'm sure. Easier platform than Google Meet, right? I'm just saying. But thanks, everyone. Have a great night. I'll post the recording shortly and send it on over to you, Randy. Have a great night.
Appreciate it.
Bye, guys.